Hour number two of the DDC. Willie Donick here along with Derek Mason, who joins us. We're going to talk some football this hour. We're expected to be joined by Teron Davenport, and we should get him on the line here momentarily. Titans starting training camp this week. It is going to be fun. It is here. We don't have to. We don't actually have to speculate on, hey, when training camp is training camp starting. D-Mace, welcome.
Hey, what's going on, Willie? It's here.
It's here. I know you had a few duties this morning.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't talk to you earlier today, or I haven't talked to you yet about the passing of Mark Howard. I'm sure you heard that news. You know, when you broke into the league, you know, he was heyday Channel 5 and then on through working for 104.5 The Zone, covered you, did a lot of Titans radio stuff. But I know we're all going to miss him. That was really, really tough news to hear about his passing yesterday. Just his footprint all over the Nashville media.
Yeah, it's always tough to hear the passing of someone that has been so integral and so pivotal in this situation, in the landscape of you know, radio media, in sports media. And like you said, when I first got here in 97, you know, he was working and so forth and so on. And then he goes over to 104 and, you know, becomes the, you know, it's you know, some people in this business, like, you can just put a silhouette over them or blackout over them and just listen to their voice and you know automatically who it is.
Yep.
He's one of those guys.
Definitely.
He's one of those guys that, you know, that he's, as soon as he turns on the mic and he starts talking, you know exactly. They don't even have to say his name. You know exactly who he is. And, I mean, he was so knowledgeable about sports, not just, you know, sports in general, but I'm saying Nashville sports, whether it be the Preds. And I know he was integral at, you know, really one, you know, along with yourself and other individuals at really pushing, you know, the Predators on air and really, you know, getting this thing going and beefing up the fan base and the excitement toward the Nashville Predators. But he was one of those guys that were a staple.
Yep.
And whether it be Nashville, the Predators, or whether it be the Titans, UT, Vandy, he knew it all.
Versed in a lot of different sports languages.
And it's
no doubt,
you know, people think it's easy, but man, when you have to cover that much and you know that much about each individual sport or program, that's a lot of work. And that's an attestment to his hard work and his dedication to making sure he's truly prepared once he got on air.
We're going to be remembering Mark throughout the day. We have in the morning show as well. We'll do a little bit more later. Let's now talk to TD. Teron Davenport is with us, ESPN.com writer, and, of course, Talking with TD, the podcast, regular contributor for us here on 102.5 The Game. Teron, good to talk to you.
Yeah, good to talk to you guys. Came in, I hear you talking about Mark Howard. I'll say this, you know, I had a lot of fun doing the draft shows the last couple of years with him, man. I didn't know him from a can of paint, but we hit it off quickly 2 years ago on the draft show. And, man, we had a great time. And Derek, you're right, man. This guy knew about every single sport. And I was really impressed with even, because he was able to go back and forth about prospects, you know, all the way up into the second round, and I was impressed with that.
You said it well, Teron, and it falls in line, I think, with everybody's experience with him. Always prepared and ready to go, and I'm sure, you know, he familiarized himself with your work a lot, which made that transition easy when you guys jumped on the air together.
Yeah, no, he was really good. It's a shame. I was surprised at Ryan Tannehill's camp yesterday when I found out about it. So, you know, definitely send my condolences to his family and everybody. He'll be missed.
How was Ryan Tannehill's camp?
Oh, it was good. You know, got to see him interact with the kids. That's the main thing. And, you know, the kids got the opportunity to meet him and, you know, have some fun, catch some passes from him. It was a solid camp.
So, Teron, speaking of camp, of course, the Titans will get ready to get going here. And I know you're getting a lot of pieces put together, a lot of training camp questions thrown your way. I noticed ESPN's got some really good stuff a little bit on each team. And one of the guys I think you've been talking about really throughout the summer since he was picked, but you've also continued that when people are saying, okay, let's look at some training camp stories to look for. You really do believe that Chig Okonkwo is going to be a good fit and perhaps an immediate contributor.
Yeah, I think he will be a really good fit and an immediate contributor. And the thing I look at is the red zone implications. You know, you watch them in mini camp. In 2 days of work, he scored four times in red zone, 7-on-7. Tannehill really seems to rely on him. One of them, he was able to break free from coverage against Kevin Byard, you know, so that says a lot there. But I just look back to 2020 with Jonnu Smith and Ryan Tannehill, the 8 touchdowns in the red zone. I think that's the kind of production that Okonkwo could approach. You know, I'm not saying 8, but I mean 4 or 5 touchdowns, and you look at just how Tannehill has always relied on tight ends in the red zone, I think Okonkwo could have a big impact from that perspective.
There was some interesting comments. Diana Russini, I think, was the one that put him out there, some optimism that all of the stuff that we were talking about with Treylon Burks during the offseason, that maybe he's made some headway there and is in a better position to start camp and hit the ground running because he's such an important person. Are you hearing the same thing? That's, I know, something we'll be watching very closely.
Yeah, well, they kept him behind, along with most of the other rookies, actually all the other rookies. They kept them behind after minicamp ended. And really that was for certain guys, i.e. Burks, it was to help get them further acclimated to this different weather, right, the humidity and the conditions, and then also to get them used to how the Titans do their strength and conditioning program. So, I think he is going to be ready to go. I've heard that as well, and that's a really good thing because, you know, he has to be someone that they could count on immediately.
We'll talk with Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation's reporter covering the Titans. You can catch him on talking with TD as well. Now, Teron, one of the one of the storylines that I'm interested in is the second string quarterback. I don't know how they have him as far as depth charts, but I can only assume that Logan Woodside, because he's been there, he would be Ryan Tannehill's backup. But Malik Willis, them drafting him in the third round, obviously they picture him more as a backup than anything else. So are you interested in that battle, who's going to be the second string quarterback?
Yeah, I'm interested just to see how much they give Willis to do. That's what I want to see. I feel Woodside is going to be the number two this year, at least for most of it. And that kind of breaks into the idea that they would have a separate package of plays for Willis. If he's the number three, that may not be feasible because of the rule where the number three quarterback comes in, no one else could play. So we'll see what happens there. But I do want to see, just as far as the development is concerned, how they handle Willis and what they do.
Do you think that the cornerback position, do you think that that's a lock with Farley and who's this, Fulton? Or do you think it will be a battle between Farley, McQuarrie, or Buster Screen? He's more of a slot guy, but even with Farley and McQuarrie, you think that will be a battle heading into camp?
I think Farley pretty much has that job as long as he's healthy. Mm-hmm. They're going to want every opportunity for their first-round pick to have that job. So I wouldn't say it would be as much of a competition, but I think McQuarrie will be able to compete for playing time. And don't be surprised to see him compete a lot with Elijah Molden for that nickel spot. I still think Molden is their best nickel, but that's an area where they rotate Screen also. So basically what they have right now, you look at those top five guys, mm-hmm. right, and Molden, you have guys who you could – just kind of like play at any position. Now, Molden isn't someone I would put on the outside as quickly, but you can do that in a pinch. And then you mix in Chris Jackson. Now you got six corners that you could pretty much do whatever with.
Now, do you expect, obviously, you know, part of the offseason toward the latter part was Jeffrey Simmons and contract talk, not necessarily a negotiation, but contract talks. Do you expect him to be full go once camp opens?
Yeah, I think he'll be full go. He's fully healthy. He actually told me that he wanted to play a little bit lighter. He said in the 295 to 300-pound range, because he wants that footwork to be a bit quicker, and he wants to get into the backfield more and create more turnovers. I think he's going to be good to go. Him not taking part in minicamp, there weren't any physical setbacks. That was just their program, the way that they had it set up.
Jerron, can't wait to get this thing cranking up, because we've been waiting for a while. It's like that great anticipation. Expectations are very high. A lot of great stories going into camp. Thanks for coming on with us, and we'll talk to you again very soon.
Yeah, for sure. Appreciate you guys. And, hey, Vrabel speaks tomorrow, so we're off and running.
Oh, we're off and running. And I feel a little bit better on Monday, Teron, than I did going into Sunday Night Baseball last night and about five innings into the game. I thought the Mets were never going to score the whole second half, and it finally broke out there, so got the W.
Yeah, got the W. Needed those runs and got to hear the trumpets play, too, man. Always, you know when the trumpets play, that's when it's lights out, man. Edwin Diaz.
That's right. Usually that's good news when the trumpets are playing. All right. We'll talk to you again soon, Teron.
All right. Take care.
All right. Talking with TD. Always check him out here on the show. And, you know, when he starts diving into those training camp stories, I think you're going to really enjoy his coverage here throughout the season. Speaking of that, D-Mace, I'm going to hit D-Mace with a couple of things. I want to get into the Treylon Burks story, Derek, because there was some encouraging news. I've got some other things that I have been doing to try to accumulate some things to hit you with about what is a realistic expectation for him going into the season. But he is going to be right at the top of the list of training camp stories once they crank up. And as Teron said, Mike Vrabel will be talking tomorrow. I'm sure his name, it won't go down the list too far of questions before his name comes up. Stay tuned. We're coming back with more here on the DDC. The DDC, presented by Spring Hill Heating and Cooling. Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, a York-certified comfort expert company. Scheduled now at springhillac.com. Willie Donick, Derek Mason here with you. And Derek, you actually called this to my attention, this piece of information, this optimism all of a sudden that has come out on Treylon Burks. Let's just assume a listener out there maybe was traveling Europe, maybe on an Australian tour. If you missed the OTAs, that's all people talked about, was Treylon Burks really struggled to complete practices. It came to light that he is dealing with asthma, has dealt with asthma. A lot of people had theories as to why. Did he put on a little bit of weight? Was it the air quality in Nashville, which is not good compared to some other places? In fact, we had some people come on our show saying it's some of the worst in the country. And so somebody that has asthma, that could really be a factor. But it does sound like, according to Deanna Rossini, and Toronto echoed it, that in the time that OTAs ended, the mini camps, and now at the start of training camp, there is reason to believe that he's acclimated a little bit better and will be better prepared to get through the practices.
Yeah, I mean, and I've said this for the longest, you know, when these young men come into this league, from a physical standpoint on the outside, they may look ready. Like, you look at a guy, whether he's, you know, 5'10", 5'11", or 6'6", 6'7". You look at them and you say, well, this from a physical standpoint, he looks like he's ready. But it's more than just looking like you're ready. You know, it's the biggest part other than the mental is conditioning. And I think if you're, I've always thought of it this way. If you're physically conditioned and ready to go, the mental part won't be as bad. You see what I'm saying? It's typically when a guy gets tired and beat down, then he starts forgetting about those all those little things. Or he starts forgetting to look at the safety on the other side. Or he doesn't hear the full call. Why? Because he's tired. You know? So you have to come into camp. And I know it's hard for these young men. Because what are they doing? I've said this for a long time. What are they doing from the day they finish with their last game, their last, you know, collegiate game, whether it be a bowl game or the playoffs, when they are done with that, what are they doing? Working on the combine. 40, broad jump, cone drills, interviews, running routes. They're not necessarily working on the conditioning. The conditioning is going to take to survive in the NFL.
Yep, you've been saying that since the start of the OTAs.
So when they get in that first camp, I can remember my first camp, and if you thought it was hot here, go to Texas in Houston in June, and it was 100, and I think every day we were there, it was over 100 degrees. As a young guy, and you're talking about almost 20 years ago, you know, in 97. Well, that was over 20 years ago, where these mini camps were like full-blown camps. Mm-hmm. There was no, oh, we're going to hold guys back. We're going to ease you in. No. You were out there. Y'all were going. Y'all were out there 2.5-3 hours in 100-degree heat. So I know how it is. But luckily for me, when I came in, it was a different mindset for me. It was a different mindset. The NFL is much different than it was back then. And thank God it is. But these young men have to understand now that when they come into camp, whether it be a mini camp or training camp, you have to be physically ready to go, conditioning wise. Because if you're not, you're going to struggle at least for, you know, a couple of weeks until you can get going.
I'll tell you what, when you started talking about that, where you get mentally fatigued, I had a flashback because when I think the transition, when you go up a level, and I don't know what it's like to go from college football to pro football, but when I went from high school basketball to college basketball, I remember the preseason conditioning was, I mean, I trained harder than I'd ever trained. I thought I was in pretty good shape. You know, you come in there and think, yeah, I'm in good shape. Then you realize what it takes for the preseason conditioning. And then by the end of it, I was like, okay, I'm in shape. But then when the practice started, it was a whole new getting in shape. And there's an acclimation that has to happen there. And I just remember thinking, man, this is fast. And man, I'm tired and I'm breathing hard. And I'm sure there's some of that. The question is, can you just get – and for some of the guys, they made that transition easier than others. Mm-hmm. And so Brooks clearly struggled with that, and the asthma, I'm sure, was a big factor. Mm-hmm. But this is what Diana Rossini said today. He's taking the bull by the horns, hearing that Brooks has shown a lot of growth, has lost some weight, and is in better shape. I've heard he's in shape. I've heard he's lost weight. I've heard there's been so much growth already. And this is from an organization that doesn't like to share. She said this on the Athletic Football Show. Mm-hmm. Now, Diana Rossini, she has found over the last few years, she has got a lifeline into covering the Titans. Because you're saying, Diana Rossini, you see her on ESPN a lot, but she's come up with some pretty good nuggets of info from time to time about the Titans. So we'll see what that looks like when he gets out there. But I think the point that she makes is the Titans don't go out there and throw that information out a lot, but they gave that up, so maybe they're showing maybe that is a good sign going
into
practice.
Well, if I'm the Titans, I would stick to protocol. I wouldn't say anything, you know, because if this
and
young
I don't
man,
think they will publicly.
Yeah, if this young man comes into camp and he still has these spells of pulling himself out of practice, or Vrabel having to pull him out of practice, or the trainers having to pull him out of practice because of conditioning, whether it be asthma, allergies, or whatnot, everyone's going to point back to, I thought this kid was ready. You know, it to me, stick to your protocol. This young man, and I said it, you know, after these mini camps, he needs to stay here in Nashville. He needs to work with their guys, because obviously what he's doing with someone else isn't working. He needs to be here, and he stayed here. So I can only assume by him staying here, he's in much better condition than he was when he got here. Now, is he still ready for the NFL? We don't know. But we will learn come tomorrow and subsequently the day after.
We're going to know, and the spotlight will be on him. Mike Vrabel, I would guess, would be very calculated in what he says tomorrow about Treylon Burks, about that whole thing, because you know he's going to be asked more than once about that. But I agree with you. I think he'll be very careful on what he predicts. Like, I don't think he will make any kind of prediction, because you never know.
Exactly.
When the actual practices start, all that work you've done, hopefully that gets him over the hump, but those first few practices could be pretty challenging, I would say.
Well, he has the conditioning test that he must take,
yeah,
and that is a grueling test.
Okay,
that will tell you whether you're in shape or not.
All right, so when we come back, I want you to take me through what the conditioning test was for you. Like, tell me what we're dealing with here. I'm going to try
hard
to put myself in somebody's shoes here. Could I pass the conditioning test? My answer today is no. When we come back, we'll have more of the DDC. Derek talks training camp. We'll talk more about Treylon Burks. We'll give you some football outsiders information, too, on the breakdown of what they think is a realistic expectation for the Titans' first-round pick. Stay tuned. We're coming back with more here on 102.5 The Game, 106.3, and The Game Nashville app. Hey, join 102.5 and 106.3 The Game, along with Newton Motor Group this summer to help kids in Middle Tennessee as we team up with Souls for Souls to provide shoes to children experiencing homelessness in Nashville and the surrounding area. With school coming back, we're taking donations to provide kids with shoes for this school year, but we can't do it without you. So help however you can by going to thegamenashville.com/shoes. All donations go directly to Souls for Souls to give shoes to the children in Middle Tennessee experiencing homelessness. So let's do some good this summer, and thank you for your help. That's thegamenashville.com/shoes. Newton Motor Group is a proud sponsor of Souls from Music City. Newton Motor Group, the best car deals in Nashville. Start at Newton. Willie Donick, Derek Mason here with you. D-Mace, we're going to give away some Elton John tickets at 11:45.
Oh.
So be listening for that. That's coming up in the next segment. Might even have a little Titans trivia to throw your way and see who's on top of it.
Isn't this his Titans last
trivia
concert?
You know, I've been hearing that for a long time. Like, I feel like 15 years ago, there was like, he's coming for the last time. But he keeps cranking them out, man. But, yeah, I have heard that. So we will see. All right, let me give you a little more Treylon Burks. First of all, conditioning test.
Yes.
All right? To get on the field for the first training camp practice, you have to pass the conditioning test.
Yes.
Most teams have it. I remember Albert Haynesworth famously failed his first one for Washington when he left the Titans, and he got off on the wrong foot, and it never, as we know, never worked out very well when he signed that ultra-mega deal when he left the Titans as a free agent. So what was it like for you?
It was because you don't understand what you're getting into until you actually get into it. They can, you know, during the camps, they would tell you, hey, listen, you know, during the mini camps as a rookie, listen, you need to come back in shape. And they give you a template of things you can do when you go home to get you ready for the test. It was a lot of, you know, 110s, you know, just conditioning long runs instead of short, you know, 40-yard runs.
Yeah.
So
110
work
yards, like the length of the field.
Yeah, so they would give you that. They would say, hey, listen, they would map it out each day and say, this is how many you need to do on this day. This is how many you need to do on this day. Because if you're not at the facility, which in 97 we were making a transition from Houston to Nashville.
Yeah.
So we didn't have necessarily.
There was no facility.
Exactly. There was no facility to work out in the summer. So they gave you this template of things you can do on your own. And it helped me because I was able to then go back to Detroit and do these things, you know, on my old field at Mumford or somewhere else. But even with doing all of that, it still doesn't quite prepare you mentally for what you're going to have to endure for the conditioning test. The conditioning test for us was, I think there were 150s. We would do it across, not the whole length of the field, but from sideline to sideline.
Okay.
We'd have to do three. We have to do 150 within a time. I think the wide receivers might have been somewhere around the mid-50s, low 50s. But we had to do six of them.
How much rest in between?
We had like a minute and 20 seconds rest.
Because that's a big part of it too.
So you think after the first two, like as a rookie, you don't know. You don't know what you don't know until you get there, right?
Right.
So
and you think, rookie, I got this. I'm fine.
You're thinking like, I'm good. You know, I'm young. I was 22. I'm young. I'm a former track runner.
Sure.
400, 8. I'm good. I know. I prided myself on being in condition. It isn't until you get to number three or number four, really number four, where the old saying is the monkey jumps on your back.
Right.
We used to say that when you ran a 400, that last 100, man, it's like your form is out of the window.
Yeah.
And you're just trying to push. Well, it was sort of like that for the last two or three 150s. The first three was a breeze, so to speak. But then those last two or three, man, you're just hoping and praying. You're trying to map it out and time it just right. You figure if I get across field at this time, back and cross field,
because
and
so
back
you're
again.
Almost not running as fast as you can. You're running fast enough to hit the time, but
exactly.
also save a little bit in the tank so you can get that fifth one in.
Absolutely.
In
so that test was grueling. Fortunately enough for me, I passed along with a lot of guys that came in, Joey Kent. There were other few guys. I think the whole rookie class as far as offensive guys and a few we passed the test. So it was never a huge deal for us. When I got into year 3-4, you started to see these rookies like, y'all need to slow down because we got six of these things. Because they were just like, bam. You're like just
rookie mistake.
Like, man, you're going to be dead at number four, and you're not going to pass the test. I've seen guys not pass that test, and you can't get on the field until you pass that test. So I've seen guys have to run that, you know, two or three days in a row until they pass.
Do you think that's why sometimes you hear of players pulling muscles because they haven't done – exactly what they need to do to prepare for that, and that's maybe when you get the muscle pull.
Yeah, and you know, it's a lot. Again, I want to stress to people and these young players, it's a lot different than conditioning for the combine and conditioning for the NFL. Totally two types of the conditioning. That's why you see guys when they come in, you always see that hamstring issue with a few guys. It's usually running backs, receivers, maybe some corners, possibly some linebackers, but because they're not used to that, you know, you hadn't been conditioning for the NFL. You've been conditioning for an opportunity to get in the NFL, which is the combine, but you're not conditioning for an actual NFL team. And that's why you see a lot of it is soft tissue stuff, you know, and some guys never recoup after that. Some guys never get over that. They always continue to have issues with their hamstrings. You've seen guys like that every
time.
It seemed like every other game a hamstring issue, or every other week is a hamstring issue. Well, when rookies come in, these guys, it's not about, you know, sprained ankles, torn ACLs. It's about hamstrings, quad muscles, soft tissue injuries. Why? Because they're not, I'm not going to say they're not in condition, but they're not in football, NFL football condition. They may be in condition to go out and, you know, do some other things, but they're not in NFL football condition.
No question about it. So let's get back to Burks. Now here is, so hopefully he's done all that and he's prepared to get off on the right foot, because I have seen so many receivers in particular who get behind the eight ball because maybe they pass the test, maybe they don't, but maybe there's a muscle pull or something, and they're not able to get the practices and the reps in. So let's hope that Burks is able to do that. Here are a couple things about Burks I wanted to bounce off of you. This was something that, you know, I guess I knew sort of generally speaking, but they got really specific in Football Outsiders. And I want you to say, I want you to tell me how much this is important. Here's one I know you're going to tune into. Because what do you always say? That the combine speed that a wide receiver runs is not nearly as important as the game speed. And that is what all of their data shows, that he plays faster, played faster at Arkansas than the 40 time that he ran at the combine. 4.55, that probably dropped him down below some of the other receivers that were picked above him. But a 4.55 at the combine, that doesn't bother you that much, does it?
No, it doesn't, because there are not many times on the NFL field that you're going to run straight 40 yards. It's just not going to do it. I mean, unless there's a blown coverage, then yes, you might sprint down the field on a go route and you're wide open, and now you got to sprint and run away from some guys. But typically, everything is in short burst. That's why I look at the three-cone drill and a lot of these other sort of short, intermediate agility things. I look at them more so than the 40-yard dash because, listen, we've seen guys run 4.2s, guys run 4.3s. Then they get out on field, and you're like, where's all this? Where's the speed you displayed at the combine? It's nowhere to be found. Or it's, yeah, you displayed all that speed, but you can't stop and go. You can't get in and out of your break. I need you to get from point A to point B as quickly as possible and make that transition. You know, the guys that get open are the guys that are able to make that transition from point A to point B as fast as that defensive back can. And I'm not saying point A to point B, meaning a go route. I'm talking a curl, stop route, comeback route, in route. Routes that you have to break down and go. Can you change directions quickly in this game? That's what it's about, separation. Speed is good, yes, but if you don't have the ability to drop your hips and get it out of your breaks, what use are you? You can only run. That's why you don't see many track guys, like legit track guys, play football, because they're fast, hella fast going forward, but they can't stop and then transition.
Okay, so this is what's encouraging about Burks. He had the highest playmaker score in the draft class, according to Football Outsiders. He was first in yards per route run. That's one metric that they had in analytics. He was second in average yards after the catch. Everybody knows what yards after the catch means, but yards per route run, they don't just go with, the yards after the catch, but it's also take into account how far the route is. It's not just a screen pass. And that's the other thing they said. He was effective with screens, great at making people miss after he caught it, but he didn't get all of his production at Arkansas just with those quick screens that you see a lot in the college spread offenses, right? You just get it, throw it out, and let the guy get the blockers going, get into the open field. He also was 23rd in the country in receptions of 20 or more air yards. In other words, the ball traveled at least 20 yards before he caught it. So that gives you a good sort of projection that he can do some different things. So all of it, we've talked so much about the asthma and things like that. I wanted to remind people that, you know, these are the things he did really well at Arkansas, and hopefully that translates. So their projection is this. You tell me if you think this is good. 86 targets, 56 receptions, 714 yards, and 4 touchdowns. So that's about 13 yards a catch. Does that sound realistic for him, or is that a little, you think that's optimistic?
Well, I'll let you know on the other side of the break.
Okay,
all right. I got to think about that one.
All right, think about that and all that you just absorbed. And also, when we come back, we'll get Derek's answer and also give you a chance to answer a trivia question. It's going to be Titans related, and you can go to Elton John on October the 2nd. So if you want to jump in now, this is going to be on the air. We're going to put the pressure on you. You got to answer the question on air. 737-1025. 615-737-1025. Call in if you think you know Titans trivia. Now, this is not going to be a cupcake. All right? This is not going to be a caller five. It's not going to be what number did Derek Mason wear. This is going to be legit trivia. All right? Legit. So you got to bring it. 737-1025. Jump on in. We're giving away Elton John tickets next here on 102.5 The Game. Oh, this is one of my personal favorite Elton John songs. Nick, on the same page. I didn't even consult. It's a good one. Right? And I was not a big Rocket Roger Clemens fan. This was his like warm-up song when he would pitch for the Yankees. But we are going to give away some Elton John tickets. October the 2nd. Coming to town if you can answer some Titans trivia. 615-737-1025. You're going to flex on air and answer this question. Let's see if you can get it. We've still got one or two lines open. You can get in on the action here. Throw your hat in the ring. But before we get the question out there, Derek is going to answer my projection via Football Outsiders. This is what they did. You know what they actually call this? Their projection system through their analytics.
What's that?
They call it the Kubiak. I can't tell you what all the letters mean, but of course, Gary Kubiak was the longtime backup to John Elway, and he became a really good coach for a long time. But somehow their projection system, there's a K, there's a U, there's a B, they call it Kubiak.
Uh-huh.
They project for Treylon Burks, rookie receiver for the Titans, 86 targets, 56 receptions, 714 yards, and 4 touchdowns, about 13 yards a carry.
Okay.
So you've been crunching your numbers over there.
I've been crunching.
Wait a minute. Did we lose the camera? Oh, no. If you were watching right now on Twitch or Twitter, Facebook Live, we just went out of sight because the camera that was secured to the glass, it's gone. It just fell.
Yeah.
What happened?
They didn't put Gorilla Glue on there, man. Gorilla Glue is not on there, so you know it's not staying. Okay. Give me those numbers again.
86 targets, 56 receptions, 714 yards, and 4 touchdowns.
714 yards, 4 touchdowns. Okay.
This is based on a 17-game schedule. So that's a little over 3 catches a week is what it comes down to per 17 games.
Okay.
About 13 yards a catch. Would you take that? I mean, that's not a bad rookie year at all. Jamar Chase.
It's not a bad rookie year. So what? 56 receptions over what? 17 games. What's that?
Yeah, it's a little over three catches
three
a week.
Catches per week.
And that could be what if he misses a few games, or maybe he has some big games. Mm-hmm. And then some games where nothing happens. You know, that's happens sometimes with rookies.
In today's NFL. And I'm just, I'm a preference my answer by saying this. In today's NFL, because it's so pass happy, because he got a particular skill set that the Titans covet, meaning he's a guy that just get the ball in his hands, he breaks tackles, he runs physical, all right? So with that being said, if he catches 56 passes, that's roughly 3 a game, I think that's underachieving. I really do. I'm not saying it's not an indictment on Treylon. You know, if they are only throwing him the ball or catchable balls, 3 a game, they can do that quickly. They can throw him a few hitches, a quick screen. This is a guy, and you say 86, so that's 5 opportunities really a game.
Yeah.
No,
that's the key.
That's low.
They're projecting
that is low.
86 targets.
Yeah, that's low for a guy that you're drafting in the first round that has a particular skill set that is coveted in the NFL, meaning.
So that's about 5 targets a week, just to do the math.
Exactly. Meaning he's a big, physical, imposing receiver, and he runs that way. So if I'm only trying to get him the ball 5 times a game, you're not maximizing his potential as a player. This is a guy in the first round. If he's healthy, if he shows that through minicamp, the conditioning thing is no problem, and he's ready to go, and he's learned the playbook, or most of it, 5 opportunities to catch the football, that's very low for a first rounder. It is.
Okay.
He's a guy that needs that 7 or 8, you know. And I know weather is a big
availability. Understanding
how
the
game
offense
is going. You know, I understand, factor all of that in. But if this is the guy that you draft, you trade away your number one guy. This guy, if he's available and ready, he needs to be getting more than 5 targets a game. So maybe
in this projection is a little bit, maybe he's not out there for 17 games.
That could be, you know, because
those numbers would be pretty good in 12 games.
Exactly. That's great in 12 games. That's like, okay, 700 yards.
That's more
than
what you're
talking
about. Yeah.
12 games. Okay, I can go for that. But we are expecting, and the Titans are expecting him to play 17 games. Now, will that happen? We don't know because of injury. But he's the guy that needs to be targeted more than 5 times a game. Because you figure, listen, I'm going to throw him 2 quick screens a game. Defense is going to be off. Get the ball in his hands. He's a physical, imposing runner. Let me throw 2 out there very quickly, okay? So to me, he needs to be in a range of, I'm not even talking about the targets, but he needs to catch at least 70 balls in this offense. So that would put him right around high 800, 900-yard range. Now, the touchdowns, it's a little bit different, you know, because when they get in that, you know, 5-yard range, they're looking to turn around and get a ball to Derrick Henry, right? So a lot, Derrick Henry will be getting a lot of that. And then you got to factor in the tight ends, who Ryan loves to throw to.
Yep. Who does he like in the red zone?
Absolutely. So if he gets 5-6 touchdowns, I think that's really good for him.
Okay. There's the projection. We'll come back to this really throughout the season and track how this is going. And, of course, it all starts with staying on the field for practice and getting yourself that spot to where on opening day he's ready to contribute. All right, now, time to throw out the trivia question for the Elton John tickets, October the 2nd, 737-1025. Got to answer on the air. We're going to go back to Derek Mason's rookie year. First season for the Tennessee Oilers. Steve McNair started all 16 games. Who was the backup quarterback? Derek Mason's rookie season. A veteran quarterback. That will be the hint. In fact, he was the backup quarterback for both years of the Tennessee Oilers. The two nebulous seasons between Houston and, of course, the stadium we all watch the Titans play in today. Remember, they played in Memphis for a year and at Vanderbilt for a year. Who was the Tennessee Oilers' backup quarterback to Steve McNair in 97 and 98? First up, Wes was in first. Wes, you get the first crack at this for being the early bird. Do you want to go to Elton John?
I do want to go to Elton John.
Okay, do you have a guess?
I don't have a guess.
He's a veteran quarterback.
I have no clue.
You've heard of him.
I have no clue. I'm just going to have to go Neil O'Donnell.
Neil O'Donnell is the guess. That is incorrect. That might have taken a guess away that some other people might have guessed.
Yeah.
615-737-1025, if you know the answer. Let's next go to Dylan. This is not Bob Dylan going to see Elton John, I'm guessing, but Dylan, do you know the answer? Who was the backup?
No, it's not, but I have seen Bob Dylan 3 times. I've also seen Elton John 3 times. It's a great show.
All right, so you're going for 4.
Yeah, I hope so. He does this never-ending tour thing. He's just been doing it for years now. It's their old tour. You know, guys, this kind of stumped me, too, and I'm just going to guess. I don't know. I was thinking Neil O'Donnell, maybe. Was it Warren Moon, possibly?
Warren Moon is a great guess, but that is incorrect. Thank you for trying, Dylan. All right, moving on. We're getting up against time. Let's go to Joey. On line 3, Joey, do you know the answer?
I don't. I'm sorry.
Do you have a
take
guess?
Take a guess. Just throw it out
there. Come on. No penalty for guessing.
No. Chris Chandler.
Chris Chandler is an excellent guess. That is incorrect. They're all around it.
Yeah.
They're all around it.
I'm surprised.
I'm a little surprised. But yes, Chris Chandler was with the Houston Oilers. Uh-huh. He was the quarterback.
They traded him away to get me.
Yes, they did.
Yes.
Didn't they? All right. We'll have to get to that part of the trivia question. Uh-huh. All right. Let's go next. Who's up? Steve is up next. Steve. Well, we got Steven and then Steve on the on deck. Steven, you're on. What do you got? Who was the backup to Steve McNair, 97, 98?
The only person I can think of, and this may be terribly wrong, but I was going to say Billy Volek.
Billy Volek is a good question. He did play for the Tennessee Titans, but he did not play for the Tennessee Oilers. Came along a little bit later. We're all around it. Now, Steve gets his crack. Steve, welcome in. Time is short. Do you know it?
My guess is Kerry Collins.
Kerry Collins is a great guess. Another veteran quarterback who backed up and then became the starter. Came along a little bit later. That's incorrect. 615-737-1025. 97 and 98.
He didn't back up Steve, though. He never backed up Steve.
He never backed
was already
up
gone.
Steve. You're right. He backed up Vince Young. They brought him in with Vince Young, and, of course, we know what happened there. That was a few years after, but we're looking for the backup to Steve McNair for the Tennessee Oilers, 1997 and 98. Played for a long time in the league, a long time. 98 wins as a starter in the league. None of them with the Oilers. Because he never started a game. 737-1025. He did get in there some. Gabriel on line one, trying to see Elton John. Can he do it? Gabriel.
Hey, let's go get it. I'm going to go with Chris Chandler.
Chris Chandler is a great guess, but that's incorrect. Somebody already guessed Chris Chandler. Do we need, I guess we have to carry this over. We got
to
carry it over.
We have to carry it over.
All right.
We're going to have to.
Keep calling 737-1025. Look it up, I guess, or go back through the annals, grab a media guide. 1997-98. Stay tuned. On the other side, we're going to give away these Elton John tickets. You're listening to 102.5 The Game.